Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
As television editor for the New York Times, Jeremy Egner has written about series like The Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, and Game of Thrones. Today I'm going to ask him about the untold story behind Ted Lasso, the show that kicked its way into our hearts. In his book, Believe, entertainment journalist Jeremy Egner traces Ted Lasso's creation and legacy through the words of the people at the show's center. Jeremy Egner, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're an editor at the New York Times. You don't need to write a book. So why did you do this?
Well, I mean, I think it was sort of because I hadn't done it before. That was the big reason why. So when the opportunity came along, it was, you know, an opportunity to check that on the bucket list. But also, I was just really interested in this story in particular. As you noted, I've written about a lot of TV shows. I've watched, you know, thousands more than that. But the Ted Lasso story was pretty unique for a lot of reasons.
Well, I've just done my own little unofficial survey around to find out how much we need to, or you need to explain who Ted Lasso is. So I ask people, have you ever heard the name Ted Lasso? Most people said yes. Have you ever seen the series? Most people said no.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So for just based on my own little survey, who is Ted Lasso?
Well, Ted Lasso is a fictional soccer coach, as we say in this side of the pond, even though it's set in the UK, and obviously they call it football over there. But that's kind of the main joke, which is he was an American football coach hired to coach football in England in the Premier League, which is the top league of professional soccer over there. And he was brought over as kind of a, which we don't find out until a little bit later, a way to sabotage the team. The owner was looking for a way to make this team go down in flames, in kind of a tribute to the old baseball movie Major League. I don't know if you remember that one, but he comes over and he has a lot of, he has a folksy demeanor and a lot of, you know, aphorisms and sort of aw shucks, cornball humor and things. And at first he's dismissed as a joke, but the more they get to know him, the more they get to realize that he is actually unique in that he tries to see the best in people. He does his best to believe in everyone. And he is somebody who is, the catchphrase of the whole show is be curious, not judgmental. And he tries to embody that. So in this way, he becomes this avatar of kindness and decency with a big bushy mustache.
Well, then you have to have a very talented, I would think, actor to play this character, Ted Lasso. And so tell people who the actor is that plays Ted Lasso.
Yeah, it was Jason Sudeikis, who is probably best known still for, he was on Saturday Night Live for about a decade in the from the 2000s, I think, to the early 2010s. And actually, Ted Lasso was inspired by, you know, it was kind of a roundabout path, but Jason played a coach character on Saturday Night Live, and which happened to be seen by a couple ad men because they were looking to create a commercial to publicize the NBC sports coverage of the Premier League. And so they wanted to invent this kind of fictional coach character and create some kind of funny ads around it. And they were looking for who to play it, and they saw Jason Sudeikis on Saturday Night Live, and they're like, well, maybe he'd be good. And then they ended up hiring him, and they flew over to England, and they created an ad that became this kind of viral hit. And so that was sort of the first introduction of Ted Lasso to the universe. And so the TV show is actually based on this character that first appeared in a TV ad.
My guest is Jeremy Egner, and I'm asking him about his book, Believe, The Untold Story Behind Ted Lasso, the show that kicked its way into our hearts. And he's just been telling us who this Ted Lasso is that the show is about. And I didn't know the character, the actor who played the role, got his start. Actually, he was a writer for Saturday Night Live. I was impressed by that before he was a cast member.
Yes, that's true. He was, his background was in improv comedy, and so he had been a performer for many years. But then when he got hired on Saturday Night Live, it was as a writer. And he was a writer, I want to say, for maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. And then was able to, you know, people saw that he was a really good performer as well. And so he was able to get his way onto the cast. And that's what he became best known for, was as a member of the cast.
So the story is that this non-soccer expert is called to England to coach a soccer team. Now, are you a soccer expert, Jeremy?
I'm fairly far from being a soccer expert. I enjoy watching it some, but you know, I mostly had to rely on. I have a few friends who are soccer nuts, and so when I needed to put, you know, some of the show in the context of professional soccer in Britain, I relied on them. I'm vaguely familiar with some of the rules, and in fact, there's this ongoing joke in Ted Lasso where he could never understand the offside rule, which I do understand the offside rule. That's the one thing that I have over him when it comes to soccer expertise.
Well, you know, the next generation of my family are soccer players, the little kids are. And so when I heard you mention the offside rule, I thought, oh, now next time I see these youngsters, I need to ask them about the offside rule.
I'm sure they'd be happy to say, well, depending on that, you know, how old they are, you know, when they're real little, they just kind of play herd ball where they chase the ball all over the field. My brothers grew up playing it. So I went to lots of, you know, youth league soccer games, but somehow never caught the bug myself.
Speaking of catching the bug, Jeremy, you got COVID at some point.
I did. And I got it really early. You know, I live in New York, which was, you know, as far as America's concerned, kind of one of the early epicenters of the outbreak. And I got it, you know, in March 2020. So very, very early, before we knew much about it, before we knew, you know, how to deal with it. And I got very sick very quickly, and was hospitalized, and it was a very scary experience. And, you know, that's kind of one connection that I have to this story, which is, you know, Ted Lasso came out in August 2020, right? So that was, you know, after several months into the pandemic. And I think one reason it became such a hit was because it is so warm-hearted, and it does preach sort of the virtues of decency and being kind to one another and trying to be sort of the best version of yourself. I mean, it's also very funny too, and it's not just super, you know, feel good and corny all the time, but it definitely has that dimension. And so, you know, it, because like I said, it was based on an ad, and so the expectations are pretty low for it. So when it showed up, it kind of snuck onto TV and without a whole lot of attention. But as people watch it, they're like, wow, this is very funny, number one. It's like a really good comedy, but it's also, you know, about being the best sort of human you can be in a way. And also, you know, being kind to yourself as well as to others. And this you kept sort of seeing on Twitter as 2020 stretched on, you know, be more like Ted Lasso. And it really resonated with people, I think partly because we were in such a dark time, and it was, you know, an emotional relief in a way to see this character and these people, you know, just trying to be their best at a time when a lot of us were afraid. And it was also, you know, an election year. And so there was a lot of infighting, political controversy, and all those kinds of things. And so it was a nice counterpoint to what we were experiencing.
Well, you just mentioned low expectations, and I could see why they might have low expectations, because this was built around two things Americans hate: soccer and kindness. That's what you say.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that was a joke that Sudeikis actually made when he went to host Saturday Night Live after the show became this big hit. You know, he went in and he was doing the monologue, and he's like, yeah, we're this big hit. And, you know, like, which is a huge surprise for that reason. It's about two things that Americans don't like, which is soccer and kindness.
My guest is Jeremy Egner. He's an entertainment journalist, and the title of his book is Believe: The Untold Story Behind Ted Lasso, the Show That Kicked Its Way Into Our Hearts. And Jeremy, you had me with that title. If it has the word hearts in it, you got me there. But the word believe, people might say, what? The title of his book is Believe? Where did that come from?
Yeah, that's actually a reference to one of the sort of hallmarks of the show, which was when, as soon as Ted gets to this new team in England, he installs a sign in the locker room that just says, believe. And as a way to sort of motivate the players, and, you know, at first it's kind of sneered at. And then, you know, as in all good sports movies, right, it's the people eventually come around to his way of thinking, and the underdogs eventually, you know, triumph in various ways. And it's about sort of belief, you know, in the team specifically, but it's also more broadly about, you know, I think belief in one another, belief in, you know, humanity, and belief in yourself. And so, you know, these can be sort of, you know, people kind of roll their eyes sometimes when you talk in those terms, because they can sound kind of cliche or trite or whatever. But, you know, I think the beauty of the show is that it did have that earnest messaging, but it sort of wrapped it within, again, you know, a very funny comedy that could be sort of, you know, slightly bawdy and you know, not, it wasn't as corny necessarily as some of the messaging would leave you to believe.
Well, from what we've been saying, a listener might think, oh, this is a story about soccer. But you make the point that the first season, in the word story is in your title, The Untold Story Behind Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. But you say that the first season is a divorce story.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you come to find out that the whole reason, you know, beneath the sunny exterior of Ted is sort of obscuring this really tough time that he's having. He's come to the university, or excuse me. There's this really tough time that he's having. He's coming to Britain basically because his marriage is falling apart. And, you know, his wife has told him that she would like some space. And so, and he is brought over there by the owner of the team who, like I said earlier, was trying to basically sabotage her own team. And the reason she wanted to do that is because she had inherited the team from her husband in their divorce. Her husband left her. And so she was angry and bitter about that and wanting to take that out on the thing that he loved, which was the soccer team. And so she did that by hiring this guy who is, you know, by all appearances, a clown who is completely unqualified.
Who didn't know the offside rule.
Oh, yes. And the reason he came over is because he was trying to get away from his own failing marriage. And so basically at the heart of this show, certainly in the first season, you have these two characters who are just heartbroken and devastated emotionally. And though their relationship starts off as being kind of antagonistic, in the end, they are the ones who help each other heal and move on from those sort of like emotional disappointments.
So if you were to, if somebody says, well, Jeremy, what's the show Ted Lasso about? You've just been mentioning family, the divorces people are going through. Mm-hmm. What other, if you were to say what the Ted Lasso show is about, besides family, what else would you say is emphasized?
Well, I think it's about a couple things. One, everybody needs everybody, right? People need people. And, you know, we're in this world now where, you know, people are sharing into their phones or they're on their, you know, on social media platforms, you know, creating their own brands and things like that. And there's a lot of different aspects of our modern life cater to a certain amount of self-centeredness, right? And so, you know, one of the main messages of Ted Lasso is that, you know, it's only through our lives intersecting with other people and their lives that we really can become sort of the best version of ourselves. And the other thing is that, you know, we have the capability at any point in our lives to do that, right? There's always time to improve your situation, to improve your outlook, and that power lies within yourself. So it's really about how, you know, we can always be working towards a better version of ourselves. And the best way to do that is to make, you know, some solid relationships to help you do it.
In fact, I liked what you said so much that I've texted it to my friends. This quote, every word that you said, this is the quote: One of the key tenets of Ted Lasso is that people need people, that it is our relationships that carry us forward to where we're supposed to be. And I have typed that quote by you to my friends, and as a way of telling them, I appreciate their role in my life. And so thank you for making that point, allowing us to take in that advice, if I want to call it that.
Well, that's very flattering. Thank you very much. And I love hearing that. But I mean, what you're saying is also very important, which is, you know, it's easy to take the people around you for granted, but it is good to step back and sort of appreciate what they contribute to your life and let them know.
My guest is author and New York Times journalist Jeremy Egner, and his book is about Ted Lasso. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Jeremy Egner, and he's written a book that tells us the untold story behind Ted Lasso. You mentioned the Ted Lasso show is about family, about mentors and teachers, and then about teammates. Mm-hmm. How nice.
Yeah, I mean, these are all nice things, right? Of course, when you first meet them, you know, there is a lot of bitterness to go around. And there's one interesting thing the show does is that it plays off fairly well-known stereotypes, right? You know, the owner of the team seems to be a somewhat embittered divorcee, and the leader of the team is this player called Roy Kent. He is sort of a broken-down veteran who is facing the end of his career. And the star of the team is this kind of prima donna hotshot named Jamie Tartt. And so the show invites us to make a lot of assumptions about these people because we've all seen a lot of shows and movies and read a lot of books. And we're like, oh, this is this kind of character. This is that kind of character. And what it does then is unpeel the layers of these folks. So we're forced to question our own assumptions, right? And in a way, what's neat about that is that it kind of parallels the way we move through the world in which you meet people and you go, oh, they're like this, they're like that. You know, they're Democrats, they're Republicans, they're hippies, they're cowboys, or whatever. We put people into these boxes. And so kind of what the show is saying is that, yes, we all do this, but you really owe it to yourself and just to the world to question your assumptions about, you know, the people that you meet in your life.
My guest is Jeremy Egner. He's an entertainment journalist for the New York Times, and the title of his book is Believe, The Untold Story Behind Ted Lasso, the show that kicked its way into our hearts. And you've mentioned the background of the actor who plays the main character, and he is talented at improv. And I was pleased to see the role that improvisation plays in this show. Do you think of any examples of that?
Well, I mean, the show in a way is sort of based in improv comedy in that the three core creators, it's Jason Sudeikis, this guy Brendan Hunt, who played Coach Beard in the show, and another guy called Joe Kelly, who wasn't an actor in the show, but they all three originally bonded because they were in an improv theater together in Amsterdam, of all places. There's a Chicago-style improv theater in Amsterdam called Boom Chicago. The three of them had all gone through that. And so, you know, all of their backgrounds are in improv. And then, you know, so when you see, you know, the show was tightly scripted, and you know, completely written, but, you know, there were certain scenes in which, you know, a lot of the interactions were sort of invented, you know, either on the fly or sort of in a rehearsal or something like that. One improv that isn't necessarily the kind you think of is, I think it was in the first season, Jason Sudeikis as Ted Lasso is talking to the owner of the team, Rebecca Weldon, and gets excited, and he runs and jumps through the doorway. And then in real life, Sudeikis bashed his head on the top of the door and was bleeding, and they had to bring everything to a stop and everything. And, you know, the doctor came in, and in the end, he was okay, you know, aside from a big scratch. But then, you know, when they saw the playback, they thought that it looked so good, they decided to keep it in the show itself. So when you watch the scene of Lasso jumping in the doorway and hitting his head, that's a real injury that you're seeing right there.
You know what else is real too that impressed me was that an actress that was a really good singer, and the writers took advantage of these talents that the various actors had. So who was the singer that they allowed to showcase?
Well, the female lead of the show is Hannah Waddingham, and she is probably best known in America anyways for this really small but really memorable role on Game of Thrones, where she played this, you know, very cruel nun who in this very memorable scene leads a character, you know, on this walk of shame through this, you know, angry city, you know, saying shame, shame, shame over and over, to the point that was kind of a meme. And so when, you know, and then she's all glammed up and everything in Ted Lasso, to the point that nobody recognized her and realized that she was the same person. But in England, she's been known for decades as this great musical theater actor. She's a, you know, West End star. And so when they brought her on and realized what a great singer she was, you know, they incorporated that into the show itself. And probably the most famous scene is a scene in a karaoke bar where she sings Let It Go, the Frozen anthem, you know, which as the father of a young daughter has heard probably 4 billion times in my life. But, you know, she sang it, and she sang it over and over and over all day as they were shooting that scene. And it's incredible in the show itself. You know, she has a lovely voice. But the people I talked to were like, all those reactions you see on the show, those are real, because, you know, as incredible as it is to see on TV, it was even more incredible to be in the room. And so you have all these kind of like this stunned appreciation from all the people in the room at the time. And everybody said, no, that was real. We were blown away. And so, you know, that's one example of them sort of using the talents of their cast in sort of novel ways.
Well, it seems like you would have a real soccer player in the cast also.
Well, the British guys, you know, who played the team, I mean, they grew up with it. They loved it, right? And so, you know, I talked to some of the folks who like were coaching them, you know, and you know, they said, yeah, you know, some of them are pretty good, some are pretty good, you know, some, not all of them are, but they had a few. There's a guy called Mo Bumbercatch who plays one of the players, and he was, you know, by popular acclaim, the very best player on the team. There's another guy called Cola Bocchini, who was also quite good. There was one really memorable moment, I think it was in season 2 when they were shooting it, and the character Jamie Tartt, who I mentioned earlier, was the big star. He had to hit this really super long, you know, free kick, right? Like a, you know, it was a penalty kick essentially, but from, you know, the middle of the field. And so they were going to, you know, he was going to kick it, and they were going to shoot these different angles, and they'd shoot another one where, you know, it was going in the net or whatever. But then he hit it and it went in. And it was like, that was another thing in which, you know, people were like, we weren't acting at all. When he kicked it in, we all freaked out. We were screaming. And that was, you know, a very much an authentic reaction. And it was actually so impressive that Hunt, one of the creators, you know, took a video of the playback on the monitor and posted it on Twitter, just, you know, as proof that it actually happened.
Well, speaking of filming the game's actual play, the area in England and around London, rains a lot, and it's cold and wet. Mm-hmm. And how do they cope with that?
Well, the first season, you know, it's hard to shoot any sports, you know, in a way that feels authentic. You know, we've all seen, you know, football or baseball movies where like that, none of these people have ever held a football in their life. But soccer is particularly tricky just because, you know, you're kicking it. And so sort of for the continuity to continue, and so, you know, they're kicking the ball, right? And so it's very hard to kick it the same way every time. So for continuity is always a challenge. So for the first season, they weren't sure how they're going to do it. And they kept putting it off and putting it off. And then finally, it's like, okay, we have to shoot the soccer. And by then it was, you know, like you said, it was London and it was November. And so, you know, the sun went down early and it rained over and over and over. And so all those games in the first season are night games. Right. Yeah. And so at the end of it, they're like, okay, let's never do this again. You know, and then in each season after that, the soccer action got more and more sophisticated until by the end, you know, they were basically showing the actor playing in a field, like a practice field. And then they would digitally cut that out and place it within these famous Premier League stadiums full of, you know, thousands of screaming fans, most of those, you know, digital renderings too. I mean, the technology behind how they put all this stuff together is really amazing. It was probably one of my favorite things to report and write about just because I had no idea how they did it. And it's really like a magic trick.
My guest is New York Times entertainment journalist, Jeremy Egner. The title of his book, Believe, The Untold Story Behind Ted Lasso, the show that kicked its way into our hearts. And people were surprised that we mentioned the low expectations, but it is an award-winning show. And you mentioned how many awards this show won. They were even invited to the White House in 2023 for something that really, for mental health initiative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it came in with almost no expectations because, you know, it was this sort of show based on an ad based around a character that we just see him kind of clowning around in these ads. And so it's like, well, how could that be the basis of a show? But yes, for all the reasons we've been talking about, and the fact that it was so much more sophisticated and better than anybody would have expected, you know, it did win a bunch of Emmys. It won a Peabody, which is, you know, one of the highest honors for, you know, electronic media in this country. And then, yeah, by the end, it had become such a sensation that when the Biden administration wanted to announce a new mental health initiative, they invited the cast and creators to come to the White House to present it. Over the past decade, you know, mental health issues have become, I think, more responsibly handled in athletics. I mean, for a long time, it was like, you know, it's like the whole joke about, you know, there's no crying in baseball. Remember
for oh, yeah.
You know, League of Their Own. You know, that was sort of the rule, and that there wasn't a lot of discussion of you know, depression and mental health issues in the arena of sports. But there's been a lot of movement in that regard over the past, again, decade or so. And Ted Lasso definitely wanted to be part of that conversation. You know, Ted has at various points, he has panic attacks. He's stricken with anxiety and, you know, goes through the process of at first trying to hide it, but then coming out at the end and talking about why it's so important to be honest about our vulnerability and how these things affect us. And, you know, they made it a priority to talk about therapy. There's a therapist character through a lot of the show. And so when the administration wanted to announce a mental health initiative, it made sense to bring these guys in because they've made that such a priority in the show.
And the therapists play roles in the story also. I was surprised how many nominations. I mean, besides you mentioned it won a Peabody. At one place, I think I remember 11 Emmys or 13 Emmys, 61 nominations for Emmys. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to take your word for it on those numbers. I don't have them in front of me, but yeah, I mean, by the end, I think by the final season, all of the main actors were nominated and, you know, it was named best comedy on television, you know, for its first two seasons. You know, Jason Sudeikis won 2 years in a row. I think Brett Goldstein won 2 years in a row. And so, yeah, it was an awards juggernaut, you know? And so again, just part of this totally unexpected story.
Well, I also like the quote, Anthony Head, "It felt like it was meant to be."
There was a lot of talk about that kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the people, as much as I talk about like the messaging and things of the show, whenever you talk to the people who worked on it, they're big believers, right? They do believe that something very special happened when they were making that show. They do believe, you know, earnestly in the messaging. As a sort of cynical journalist, I go in expecting people to say, yeah, whatever, it's just our show. But, you know, there's a kind of, you know, like shiny eyed devotion that people sort of bring to conversations about it. And, you know, started with Sudeikis. He was very serious, but, you know, supportive and sort of talked about at the end of the show that, you know, there, I guess he did a big speech for like the final day of shooting. He's like, you know, something special happened here. Let's carry this forward into our lives. Let's sort of, you know, it's like, be the Ted you want to see in the world or whatever. I don't think that's what he said, but that's just my interpretation.
And another quote by Ted Lasso was about being not judgmental, be curious, not judgmental. And I was curious then too, because he gave Walt Whitman the credit for that, and that's not true.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, that's in the show. They're like, yeah, I saw a quote from Walt Whitman, but you try to track that down and, yeah, I don't think anybody knows exactly who said that, but they're pretty sure it wasn't Walt Whitman.
Yeah, to be curious, not judgmental.
Whoever said it, it's a nice, you know, it's a nice way, nice thing to think about as you go through life.
Yeah, and the message of treating others with kindness. Now, this show premiered in August of 2020, and I think this message is all the more important now, to treat others with kindness.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I think we can see plenty of examples of people doing the opposite, whenever we want to pick up our phones or look on TV or whatever. So yeah, you mentioned the be curious, not judgmental. I mean, that goes back to that whole idea of stereotypes. And you sort of put it together and you think about the way our discourse can turn so sour so quickly. We're in another election year. There's no shortage of people being, you know, cruel to each other, and saying bad things about one another and expecting the worst of one another. And so I think these messages are pretty timeless and, you know, a good thing to keep in mind as we go through yet another polarizing election.
So thank you for writing this book, Jeremy. I really do. I enjoyed it thoroughly myself, because I happen to be a Ted Lasso fan myself. So let me remind people again, the title of your book, and the author is Jeremy Egner, who is an entertainment journalist for the New York Times and a Ted Lasso fan. The title of his book, Believe, The Untold Story Behind Ted Lasso, the show that kicked its way into our hearts. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. This is a lot of fun.
After a break, I'll be talking to Chico author Terry Matthews, who's written a self-help book about cancer. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My next guest has inspirational, hopeful, practical, written tips for people beginning treatment for cancer. Chico author Terry Matthews is a survivor of two unrelated cancers herself, and her insights into the patient's point of view have been used for professional training for hospice volunteers and social workers. Terry Matthews has a degree in biology from UC Berkeley, while her husband Joe has a medical degree and practiced medicine until 2018. Teresa Matthews has used her experience to write three self-help books. The latest is Cancer, Exploring Your Path. Terry Matthews, welcome.
Thank you so much, Nancy. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I emphasize the word your in the title of your book, Exploring Your Path, and I'm sure you have a reason for capitalizing that word your.
I absolutely do. I think sometimes people hear the word cancer and they think it's a one-off entity, and it isn't. Every cancer is different. Even someone who has breast cancer can't compare their journey to someone else's journey because we are unique individuals with a unique history, and so our bodies are different. Our doctors are different. The treatments are different. Our responses to treatment are different. And it's very important to recognize that because that means that whatever I am going through, there is hope for me. Just because someone else I knew with that cancer succumbed to it, it doesn't necessarily mean that I will follow that path. So this is about our own path and how we can make the most of it.
This word path keeps coming up. And the cover of your book, well, describe the cover of the book, Terry.
Oh, the cover of my book is a bucolic scene with the mountain and two roads. And I'm a big fan of Robert Frost and his poem, The Road Less Taken. And I wanted to capture that because there is the road that says, I have cancer, I'm doomed, it's all over, pull the covers over my head. There's another path that says, aha, here's a challenge. I've met challenges before, and I am taking that road less taken.
So the cover, beautiful greenery, a beautiful blue sky, and I was going to call those roads paths, since that's in your title, and it shows them diverging. Now, you just mentioned different words for this experience. And you, back when you were newly diagnosed as a cancer patient, you got a note from a friend.
I did.
And you reproduced that little interchange on the back of your book. Would you read what your friend said, or just read that paragraph?
I will. As a newly diagnosed cancer patient, I received a handwritten note of encouragement and support from a friend, also a cancer survivor. She wrote, I hear you are having an adventure with cancer. My immediate response was disbelief. This is an adventure? You too might be incredulous about the possibility of joy. As I walked through my cancer journey, I discovered the truth and power of her insight.
This is CHICO author Terry Matthews, Teresa Matthews, reading from her book, Cancer, Exploring Your Path. And I've noticed that she said, called it an adventure, because a friend of mine who had stage 4 cancer, and we were traveling and we found ourselves in Colombia. And we didn't expect to be in Colombia. This is South America now. And he said what could have been misfortune turned into a pleasant adventure. And so we spent a week more than we expected in this place that was beautiful. So so much of what you said, I could verify from my own experience, Terry, as you write this book for care receivers and caregivers. And you have played both roles yourself.
I have, and I am delighted to be able to be a caregiver for my husband, who was at my side through all my cancer adventures and is still at my side.
And he going through his own adventure.
He is.
Like a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the most precious gift we can offer anyone is our attention. When mindfulness embraces those we love, they will bloom like flowers. And that puts a positive, gives a positive note, a precious gift.
Listening is so important, and that has been a theme throughout my life, that is the way that I connect with other people. Listening and eye contact are very important to me. I worked as a volunteer at the Cancer Center, and so often just looking at someone and reading their body language and hearing what they had to say was so helpful.
You know, another thing that I, based on my own experience, is so true. You mentioned the kindness of strangers. And oh my goodness, that has been my experience so many times that I couldn't believe it. And a couple of times I was able to be the one offering kindness to a stranger. And I was so grateful.
It's a gift. It's a gift for both the receiver and the giver, because you feel delighted that there's something you can do, whatever it is. I remember going over and pruning the roses for a friend who was having a hard time. And she had just casually mentioned, oh my gosh, I can't get to anything. I just can't get around to it, even pruning the roses. So I just sort of tiptoed over and pruned her roses one day. And she said, oh, you don't have to do that. And I said, it's a joy.
Well, one of the times that comes to mind for me is an experience we share walking the pilgrimage across Spain. And this young man was in this village, and he talked about his feet hurting and asked if we would take a look at them. And we bandaged his feet. And as we were doing that, he said, I prayed about this last night.
Oh.
So we were able to be the answer to his prayer.
That
with
is
total strangers.
Oh, it's a wonderful feeling. And, you know, the people who don't even know how much difference they're making in someone else's life are still touched.
And I was so grateful that for all the times total strangers had shown me kindness that I was able to do that myself. My guest is Terry Matthews, and she has written three books, self-help books, about cancer, and the latest, Cancer Exploring Your Path. Have suggestions for those of us who have friends or family with cancer? Because sometimes we don't, you mentioned every experience is different. How do we know how to be helpful? You mentioned listening, and I jotted down one of your quotes. It doesn't require doing, listening and empathy. Because a lot of times people don't know what to do. But
so true.
You say you may not have to do anything. And the fact that you listened to your friend who couldn't prune her roses, you listened and you were able to be helpful.
The listening comes first. One of the first chapters I wrote was actually, what do you do if you are a friend or loved one of a cancer patient? And I started out with the don'ts. Because so many people don't know what to do, and they do something that's unhelpful. So I'm going to just read that section. Don't tell horror stories or any anecdote that adds to fear and apprehension. Don't throw out advice. Don't say, I know how you feel, because none of us ever do. Don't pry or be nosy. And don't avoid your friend because you don't know what to say or do. But the things you can do are to be available, but not intrusive. Ask before you drop in for a visit, and let the patient set the time and length of stay. Sometimes 5 minutes is huge, and sometimes an hour is way too long. Do be willing to be used in whatever way the patient needs help. And share the journey. Say, I can't be with you every minute, but we're walking this together. Do use touch to express your care and support. Hold someone's hand if that's appropriate. Do ask permission to pray for the patient and follow through. Do make a commitment to yourself and your friend that you will not abandon him or her. Do respect privacy and confidentiality. And do validate feelings. It's hard. You're tired. I get it.
This is Terry Matthews reading from her book, Cancer, Exploring Your Path. And again, I've had experience like that where when my husband was diagnosed with cancer and a friend with all the best intentions, oh, she knew who, what doctor he should see and what kind of cancer this was, and it wasn't helpful, but she had the best of intentions. So I think people, even if they don't have a situation where they're the caregiver or the care receiver, it's helpful to read your book because it's going to come up. I think you can be just confident of that, that it's going to come up. And if you have that temptation to want to say, oh, I know about your cancer, and just listen instead of tell them what to do.
Exactly. And the person and family members in a family with cancer have done so much research. They have really made every effort to find the best doctors and the best treatments. And it's very unhelpful if someone says, oh, I know, you need to have sharp cartilage or whatever the current care popular on the internet might be. It just adds a sense of stress. Oh, I guess I ought to go check that out. And they don't need that. That's unhelpful. The thing that would be helpful is to say, I have heard something about this. Would you like more information? And at that point, they can say, no, thank you.
Well, speaking of information and research, some years ago, Enlo was going to open a library, and you were instrumental in establishing this library. And I think I have, if not the first card, one of the first library cards for the Enlo Hospital. And then the internet provided the answers that people might normally go to the library to research. Do you find that, is the library still open? Because I haven't been there myself.
The library is still open. It is greatly shrunken. What happened was that people did begin going to the internet to do their research. It has its pros and cons. The biggest downside is that it's very difficult to tell how authoritative something is on the internet.
Often I've found that there'll be something that looks like medical advice and they're actually advertising a product.
Yes, that is one of the pitfalls.
So if I were to go to Enlo Library, I could open a book and they're not trying to sell me anything.
That's exactly right. And the other thing that's available is assistance with internet searching. So there are people there who can say, here are some sites that you can trust. The American Cancer Society, the National Institutes of Health. These are the people who are at the cutting edge of what's available, and it's verified. It's true. You can count on it.
My guest is Terry Matthews, and she has written 3 self-help books about cancer, how to deal with it. And you have a chapter in this book, Asking for and Accepting Help. And I think your advice in that chapter is so helpful, Terry.
I have always been the person in charge. I have been the one who sees...
You worked in medical offices.
I did, you know, and I've been involved in a lot of volunteer activities. I'm the one who provides help for other people. I'll quote for the first part of the book, or that chapter, what? I'm the helper, not the one who has needs. How can I do that? I am strong and a giver, not a receiver. Whoops. Your health has changed, and the size of your physical and emotional bank account has changed with it. You used to have 10 hours of productive time a day, and now you might have 2 15-minute windows to work. This is your season to reap, to cast away burdens. Often in your life, you've given without repayment and gladly. This is the time in your life to allow others to give to you. You can fuss, fume, and refuse to admit it, or you can gracefully accept it.
Do you know, you were saying gracefully accept it because you'd think that would be easy. But when I was a caretaker, I kept getting apologies for what I was doing. And it was a privilege. I felt it was a privilege to be the caretaker. And I didn't feel apology was necessary at all.
Yes, I agree. And the gracefulness part comes with experience. You need to be kind with yourself and acknowledge that this is a time when you really could use that help. And the people who are offering mean it. They're not just saying words. And so accepting that is a gift to both of you.
What else, other advice do you have for asking and accepting help?
One of the things that I found really helpful was to write down a list, a paper record, or put it on your phone for each person who offers help. Because then when someone says, what can I do? I'll do anything. You can say, I need a ride to my doctor's appointment on Friday. Or I need somebody to run to the drugstore and pick up that medication. Sometimes people will think, oh, I'll bring a meal. And a meal is wonderful unless you have six others sitting in your refrigerator. So writing it down and knowing who is doing what when helps you and helps the giver.
Now, also in this chapter, and I did this as a caregiver, go with this person to medical appointments to provide a second set of ears and to record the advice of the doctor. So I did that, and happily, of course. But this is another of the things that you mentioned in here, besides this helper record, writing down names, addresses, best time to call, availability, and so forth.
I think having a second person with you for every appointment is key. My husband and I have done this for 30 years. Neither of us goes to an appointment without the other. And it's amazing how differently two people hear the same person's advice. And it's really helpful to have that double check. I was grateful to be able to do it.
Well, we thank you. My guest has been Teresa Matthews, her book, Cancer, Exploring Your Path. I would also like to thank my first guest, New York Times journalist Jeremy Egner, whose book tells the untold story behind Ted Lasso.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.